What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Yala. Your thrice weekly podcast where we talk about hottest news with a touch of what, Terrence?
Good old humor.
Good old humor, man.
Yeah.
It is the end of the week podcast, the pre-Wong era.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's next week, right? It's
next
5 days.
Five days
from now.
5 days.
Yeah.
Pre-Wong.
In the evening.
In the evening, yeah, correct. Yeah. You're going to watch it, right?
How to watch? Oh, I guess the live stream.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in the after party. After party.
And the Istana. You see the lights all.
And then cocktails all around. And then people serving drinks.
Yeah, that's why. Then PM, LHL just going ham.
Going ham, like, going ham. My ham.
Yeah, meet They play the techno music, the techno version.
Handing out Elon Musk books.
The cake was interesting. For you, the thing that stood out was the Elon Musk book.
For those who don't know, there was this cake presented to Lee Hsien Loong this week while he was his last day in Parliament as PM, right?
Mm.
And the cake had some predictable things like, you know, a bowl of mee siam, as in decorations on the cake, a bowl of mee siam. And some fruits and some other iconic things and some books that he likes. There's one book about coding. Okay. But then there's one Elon Musk autobiography or biography there. So I didn't really understand how come Elon Musk takes up so much of Lee Hsien Loong's headspace. Right? Unless it's a book that he recommends that everyone reads.
Yeah.
So if you are part of the inner circle that Lee Hsien Loong shares his recommended reads, maybe that's one book he tells everyone to read.
But what's wrong? What's wrong if he likes the Elon Musk book?
Don't we do business with Tesla, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to feel like, oh, you know, whoever's in the driver's seat negotiating with Tesla, big business, all right, Tesla and everything. You don't show your cards in terms of like, oh, I admire this guy or anything, right? Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's you or you tell people to read his book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Generally you need to have a poker face in negotiations, especially with a big company like Tesla that is promising to do a lot of things in Singapore. I'm not saying there's any impropriety there. I'm just saying it makes you look like a weaker negotiating point, right? You start from a weaker negotiating point. They know that, oh, you like my boss, you know, that kind of thing.
Maybe that's the new Lee Hsien Loong, you know, post-PM. He just keeps it real. No more hiding.
Yeah, yeah.
He like Elon Musk, he'd be, yo, Elon, I like your book, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe it's to court BYD,
Possible. Oh, it could even be a negotiating tactic. It's like, let me tell everybody, you know, you see, my guys all read your book, they understand, so that's why Tesla needs to come here to Singapore and set up a factory.
Then he talks to BYD, you know, like, oh, your CEO written a book, you want it to be on PM Wong's cake, you better come to Singapore.
Sorry, what's BYD?
BYD, the Chinese electric company. Electric car company.
Oh, I see. Okay.
BYD.
Sorry, I don't know the acronym. I didn't even know what the name
is. You'll see them on the road now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, there are a lot of BYDs in Singapore.
Okay, I'm not very fixated on like...
Because you don't care about the environment, is it?
I care, but not specifically the brands. BYD.
BYD.
How do I tell that it's a BYD?
The logo is BYD.
BYD.
Yeah.
Okay. Does it stand for anything?
Yes, I think it does.
Bring your dog. No,
BYD.
Yeah.
What does it stand for? I thought it did, but it doesn't. Or at least not that I know of.
Or is it just pronounced BID or something?
It's Build Your Dreams.
Build
Your Dreams. Thank you, Dom. Build Your Dreams. I don't know. Yeah, it's Build Your Dreams. That's what it stands for.
I see.
Build Your Dreams, bro.
Yeah. But so, BYD. Yeah, Lee Hsien Loong has...
It's also pronounced probably BIRD.
Yeah, BIRD. BYRD,
No, BYD.
How's bite. That bird? That's bit. Bite, right? A bit.
Okay. But yes, PM Lee, what?
So, are those part of his dreams, right? Eating mee siam, reading an Elon Musk autobiography, and some ang ku kuih on the side.
Yeah.
Is that what his retirement plan is?
No idea, man.
No idea.
We'll find out. But as he said, as he clarified, he's retiring from PM, but he's not retiring from being an MP.
Yeah. Related to even our topic that we're talking about.
Indeed.
Yeah. But before going to that, right?
Yes.
Why don't we just talk about what we want to tell people?
Yeah, if you're new to this podcast or if you've been listening to us for a while and you enjoy it, it would be great if you could tell one other person. And also, follow us wherever you're listening to this right now. If you're on YouTube, hit the red subscribe button. If you're on Spotify or Apple, just click follow. It helps the algorithm tell more people about us. And
And we're exploring new ways for Yalabat listeners and fans to show their love for Yalabat, right? Which will be announced in due course.
Oh, now we can do the influencer thing. You know, big announcement coming.
Big announcements coming. Bigish. And we're hoping to get you guys along. So yeah, make sure to follow. And check. And if you want to work with us, also check out ministryoffunny.com.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
Cool.
Cool, 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 cool.
Yeah.
So, the first topic. Parliament was relatively quiet. Aside from the PM Lee cake, probably because it's his final parliament sitting as a PM, so don't know whether that factored into things being a little more, you know, calm, more
civil, right?
more civil.
Yeah.
But one big thing did happen, or rather a big conversation between the economist and soon to be PM Lawrence Wong. It was an interview conducted on Monday, May 6th, and the full transcript was published on Wednesday. On the Economist website. It's not like a super long interview.
Yeah.
The full transcript is available online, but we thought we would just unpack some of the things that he said, because they talk about a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
They didn't go into one thing very deeply, but a bunch of stuff. After reading it, just broadly, how do you feel, Terrence?
I mean, one big thing is the last time The Economist was in the news in Singapore. Was what price your sneer? Remember when Shanmugam had a rebuttal of the Economist article about Singapore's next generation of leadership?
Talking about Lawrence Wong specifically.
So I'm quite surprised that this article came out. That it's a quite wide-ranging, deep interview with Lawrence Wong. And do you detect any sneering in the tone of this?
It was very diplomatic.
Yeah. I thought it was they asked him not easy questions, quite tough questions, but he didn't have a very adversarial kind of confrontation with the Economist. Whereas the previous time we talked about Economist, it was very adversarial, right?
Actually, the article wasn't adversarial, but the response.
But you could, the article does have a certain tone when it talks about
a bit condescending.
So it was adversarial. I mean, I would characterize it as adversarial that way.
Maybe it was because of the response. That's why they did this. We never know.
Maybe. Yeah.
We never know,
then
right?
Then they're like, extend an olive branch. Here's a chance to interview.
Yeah, extend an olive branch.
PM Wong. PM designate. Yeah.
So basically, how you want to do this? Shall we just go through some of the things that were spoken about?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's mothership has 10 things Lawrence Wong said, right?
Oh, this is made a listicle out of that.
Yeah.
10 things. But, so some of the questions was started off by, the geopolitical scene internationally and how it's going to affect Singapore. And then the US-China relations and the direction of China under Xi Jinping and where it's headed. It started off globally, speaking about global US, China specifically, and then Singapore stance towards being either pro-China or pro-America. But those few answers to start off with, what did you think of Lawrence Wong's answers?
I think it's good to maybe we just talk about a certain topic and then what he said that and what stood out to us, I think that would be useful. Because, you can find a lot of summaries online.
Yeah.
I think what stood out is that, he seems quite the statesman. He understands the diplomatic relationships between countries now. And he states quite clearly where Singapore stands on all of them. But one thing that did surprise me that I did not realize that was so clear was that Singapore, he says it very clearly when it comes to the issue of Taiwan, right? And it's interesting because The Economist talks about Taiwan after referencing what Singapore did for Russia Ukraine, where we stood really strongly against what Russia did, right? And we're the only ASEAN country that imposed sanctions apparently, right? He said no other country would dare to do that, right? But then when it comes to Taiwan and the issue of Taiwan's relationship with China, he said quite outright that Singapore is not pro independence or Taiwan. Singapore is totally pro China policy. To me, it was that's a very clear stance that he's laying there. And for me, I forgot maybe that was that's our official stance on everything.
I also forgot.
You forgot, right?
Yeah.
Because I always think of like, oh, Singaporeans and Taiwan, you know, we go there for holiday, you know, army also, we go there for training, all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But in official like parlance, like when they talk to each other, Singapore is one China policy.
Yeah. And he literally said, we have long upheld a one China policy and opposed Taiwanese independence even before we established diplomatic relations with the PRC. I had no idea.
Yeah.
For some reason, same as you probably, I also thought Singapore recognizes Taiwan. But I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Whether you agree with it or disagree, it makes sense. But I was like,
Because ultimately, it's more of a political stance that you have to make, right?
Yeah.
And you see it bear out in like when you go for like, let's say Olympic Games or something like that, what's the name of the country that athlete is representing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you say Taiwan or you say China, you know, like when WWE wrestler John Cena said that Taiwan's a country, he had to do a public apology. Yeah. No, these things matter, you see.
Yeah.
So for Lawrence Wong to be so clear about it here, means, he kind of knows, like, you know, he needs to stand his ground on certain issues, and not be baited into, you know, like comparing Ukraine, Russia versus Taiwan, China and all that.
Yeah, but that was the thing, you know, like when you play the computer games and you want to choose a character and certain characters like are very strong but maybe slow and certain characters are very fast but maybe not the strongest, then you see, you know, those ratings and like got like spikes.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe that's Lawrence Wong's, I don't know, strength or place where he feels like very even on all around.
All-rounder kind of thing.
All-rounder, but not particularly towards one thing. Which I don't know whether it's good or bad. Because reading this article, I was like, so many times I had to reread. I'm like, okay, what is he saying? Because he would say like, you know, the unipolar moment for America has ended.
Yeah.
So I think, okay, you know, it's no longer up there, it's ended. Yet it remains the preeminent power in a world that's transiting to a multipolar world. Then I'm like, okay, but it's still up there. So like there were a lot of times, especially in the early parts of the interview, where I was like, you say one thing, but you know, it's like saying, Terrence, you know, I don't like you, but you're a nice guy. You can be an asshole sometimes, but you're also very nice sometimes.
Yeah.
At the end of it, like what do people think I think of you? Right. So in this case, I was like, but maybe that's the way he has to answer. I think for certain questions, he was a bit more specific, like that Taiwan thing. So that's where I felt, oh, okay. And another thing that struck me is like, I mean, the question is really asking about everything in the world. And as PM, you have to be able to answer that. Right. So that was quite impressive. Because this, even though it's written out, the transcript is there. I don't know whether there was a video that was released, but it was a face-to-face interview.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've talked about this at length before, right, about his style of communication or his style of leadership, right? He's not the strongman type, you know, who tells you this is the one thing and then we're doubling down on that, right? But in some ways, we've also talked about how maybe that's what we want from our politicians, that they shouldn't be so exciting and so like
adversarial
that you know, it just rouses up emotions rather than tells you logically how to approach a problem, right? Because we've had a lot of that, we've seen a lot of that in the last decade or so, right?
Just in Singapore, right?
Yeah, all around the world where you know, politicians are being more polarized and even standing for causes that they themselves never did in their lives, right? Because it's good for politics, right? And so maybe having someone that can balance everything a bit more in the middle. It's an exercise in learning how to tolerance and how to deal with different very extreme opinions, So yeah, I mean, I think that's also a hidden strength. So in your analogy, maybe it's one of those hidden kind of like attributes that you don't see.
Maybe no one ranks highly, but when to win the game, you have to have that skill. You have to have that skill. Because I mean, that being said, it's still an informative, high-level perspective on the world. Like, you know, you even mentioned like the assessment of where China's going under Xi Jinping. Do you think it's going in the right direction? He talked about like, you know, the certain structural adjustments they're going through and how like when they opened up the country, there was a lot of good that came in, a lot of economic prosperity. But as Deng Xiaoping once said, you open the window, you get flies. So now they are facing the kind of downsides of capitalism, Just focusing on economic growth, lah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So then, like, also talking about the US-China relations, I mean, I think it just made clear also that, yeah, Singapore is in a unique stance because we can't ever say we are pro-China or pro-US, lah, which is why he answered, I'm pro-Singapore, right?
Yeah.
But beneath the surface, you know, there's a lot of things that need to be, how you say, catered towards. Lah. Like, even the way he described the US,
yeah,
we're not an ally of the US.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. He very specifically said, we are not an ally. We are a major security cooperation partner.
Yeah.
The only one in the world.
Yeah. And he said the only one in the world, exactly. So in some way, like, I would imagine most people would say, but that's still an ally. But I think they're very careful. Lah.
Yeah.
We're not allies. That's why when they asked, will we join the AUKUS, which I guess is Australia, UK and the US? We won't lah because those are allies. That's what he said. But we are major what?
Major security cooperation partners.
Yeah. That's like saying we're not dating lah. We're just fuck buddies lah. You know?
We're not saying fuck buddies. Complicated lah.
It's complicated. We're in a situationship.
Yeah, situationship.
Yeah, we're in a situationship. So people like, are you all together? Are you all no, we're not allies.
Yeah,
we're just co-security partners.
Maybe that's the new relationship status.
Yeah, that's right.
Co-security partners.
Because what do you provide me with?
Security.
Yeah. And we are partners in this. Major security cooperation partner.
Cooperation partner, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows what that means?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he did say like, yeah, you know, there's exchanging of intelligence, purchase technology and military equipment, but we have very productive two-way exchange of information in many areas of security and defense.
Yeah.
You could totally describe a relationship like that.
Correct.
You know, we not only purchase, you know, dinner and wine, but we have a very productive two-way exchange of bodily fluids in many areas of my body and my partner's body.
Yeah.
So, situationship, lah.
Yeah.
Situationship.
But, I mean, beyond the just talking about stuff happening outside the world, I did like it that they also asked about how do these geopolitical tensions end up affecting the social fabric of Singapore, lah. And they talked about an issue where, like, you know, Russia-Ukraine affects us economically, but you don't see people on the ground making a lot of noise about it, right? Whereas, like, whatever's happening in the Middle East now, actually is very, very little impact on our economy directly. But you see a groundswell of, like, opinions and people being very emotional about it, right? And they talk about how to balance that, given the situation in Singapore and all, like basically there's a Muslim population in Singapore as well.
You know?
And I thought, this was a very interesting exchange between the economist and Lawrence Wong. But they pointed out certain things that, I don't think about, like the Russia-Ukraine war has a very big impact on our economy and supply chains and all that. But you don't hear people, you know, protesting or campaigning about it. But the reverse is true when it comes to what's going on in Gaza.
Yeah, I mean, in some way also, you know, when they said, you know, can Singapore ever become like race blind, lah? You know, and I like how Lawrence Wong responded saying that, you know, we would like to evolve into a society where we become race blind, but we are also very realistic. And I mean, throughout this answer and the other answers to the questions that you pointed out, talking about Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Gaza, he didn't shy away from the fact that Singapore has diverse races. Races, in his words, are very primal, very emotive, and it can be stirred up at any point in time. So I think acknowledging that, because you know how like sometimes you hear the rhetoric that, we should be race blind. You know, everyone is equal. You know, everyone is equal in the eyes of everyone else. And I mean, I don't think that's true. And when you look at what's happening around the world, sometimes when you emphasize that too much, you cause even more problems. Rather than acknowledging, okay, we're all different, we have different cultures, we have different meanings attached to different things, the whole key is to learn how to embrace that and live with each other. As opposed to saying, no, we're all the same. We're all the same. So for him to say that very explicitly also felt a bit practical.
That's right.
And then like also about like the one thing they even compared him to, I mean, Lee Kuan Yew in some way, right? You know, that there's a quote, you know, that Lee Kuan Yew said, whoever governs Singapore must have that iron in him.
Yeah.
And I think most people will remember the video clip of Lee Kuan Yew saying that, right?
Yeah.
Like him in the rain and all. And they ask, Lawrence Wong, do you see yourself as that kind of leader? Do you have iron inside you? This is a bit suggestive.
Yeah.
But what Lawrence Wong said, and I quote, I believe when push comes to shove and the time comes to take hard decisions, I will do so.
Mm.
So long as the decision is in the interest of Singapore and Singaporeans.
Mm.
What do you think of their answer? Does it fill you with iron or not?
It's not as emotive, right? For sure. But the good thing is that we have seen him at the forefront of COVID, right? Forefront of dealing with COVID. And he's had to explain difficult decisions or unpleasant decisions, unpopular decisions to people.
Mm.
In some sense, we talk about it as a trial by fire, right? And he kind of survived that and came out on top of it, I would say, the fact that he's about to become PM as well, right?
Mm.
So, the question, you would think that this kind of question is to bait you to say something even more fiery and even more stab the ground.
I got titanium in me.
I got titanium. Who needs titanium, iron? Iron rust.
Yeah. Yeah.
Titanium doesn't. iPhone Pro. iPhone 15 Pro. Titanium.
Yeah, version. Exactly. The type.
But then he doesn't, I feel like humans doesn't need to, doesn't need to fall into that trap of having to prove his manliness or strongman personality, So, I would say, okay, I'm down with the answer,
Yeah.
You needed the strongman.
No, I'm starting to kind of like look forward to what this means as with him as PM. It's kind of like, I wouldn't say softer leadership, but more diplomatic. Is that the word?
Yeah. I characterized it as like consultative. Like he wouldn't just go out and say, I'm going to do this way. He talks to people and at least gives the impression that he is listening to people.
And I mean, in some way, I think you pointed out just now in the previous podcast is that maybe this is the kind of, how you say, wouldn't say boring, because that sounds a bit negative, but tepid. Tepid politician or political remarks that we actually need.
We
leave the drama all to other countries.
Yeah.
But our politicians just be like vanilla.
Practical.
Practical.
Yeah.
Nothing controversial. Nothing that you look at this, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe he said that. Wow.
Yeah. Correct.
Is it okay? Every answer is like, okay.
Yeah.
You get the message, but nothing riles you up, but you get the message.
Maybe he needed to do that, he would have needed to whip out his guitar at the end of this.
Yeah, that's right. He was like, well, let me close off with a little melody I wrote. Maybe that's his thing. Always carrying a guitar with him.
Always carrying a guitar. Like, it's you want personality, I give you a you. Come play guitar.
Very demarcated. This is my boring politician vibe. This is my musician vibe.
I mean, what do you think about, there's a whole series of questioning about the rise of, identity politics and racial tensions as well in Singapore, right, specifically. What do you think of that exchange that he had?
So The Economist posed the question, one of the events that's happened in the West is the rise of stronger identity politics for ideological reasons, perhaps social media as well. Do you think that's a threat to Singapore? And he did say, we do see some of it in Singapore. Some people do get caught up with it. But apparently we take a very different approach. What he said, it's not about assimilating into one's single identity. We allow people to embrace their own identities, whatever they are. I think you take it at face value, because he goes on to say, it's not about subtracting, we expand the common ground, it's about bringing people together to have more engagements. And while on paper it's easy to be like, still got discrimination, still got that. I mean, when you look at it compared to other countries, I think we're not that bad in terms of integration of races and religions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, there will still be some groups that get marginalized, get discriminated.
Yeah.
But my first reaction to this was like, really, man? Really, man? But then I felt like, okay, it's not ideal, but it's not horrible.
Yeah.
But what do you think?
No, I agree. I agree. And I think it it reflects in his answer, right? That he talks a lot about just bring people together to have more engagements, right? And not in a protest, a big protest on the street kind of way and all that, right? but about like it's little activities and events around the race that, you know, we celebrate and make sure that people see each other celebrating these things, and you sort of, okay, you understand that it's just part of things going on. Like, you know, I mean, Hari Raya was happening last month, right, you know, for extended period. And yeah, we know that this is happening, and as Singaporeans, we kind of a bit more understanding about different things, right, about traffic situations or people's own personal lives and things like that. So yeah, I think we are more tolerant in that way. And it's something quite unique to us.
So like, I mean, they go on to talk about the, you know, Forward Singapore, the changing of the guard. They even ask, like, what about the succession of power? Like, why does, the MP, the PM kind of staying over in parliament? And Lawrence Wong said, yeah, that's a Singapore tradition. Like, there's always been a very transitional phase for leadership succession. And yeah, like, that in some way is good. But I mean, like, overall, I mean, is there any other questions that stuck out to you?
No, I think the interesting thing, they ask him about his legacy as a PM, what he hopes to achieve in the next decade. I thought all these kind of questions are quite interesting, right? Yeah, coming from a non-Singapore media as well.
But at the end of it, after reading it, like, how do you feel? Like, do you feel more confident or more conviction or more optimistic?
I would have liked to watch this interview if possible, if it was like face-to-face, right? Because I think, yeah, reading it still feels very different from hearing it from the horse's mouth and everything. But from reading it, it sounds good, like in the sense that, okay, at least the geopolitical situation, there's quite a deep understanding of everything going on. And I think from anecdotes we've heard from people and everything is that Lawrence Wong reads a lot, right? So hopefully that helps him as well in navigating these geopolitical tensions. So, because I think that actually will be a very big challenge in the next decade or so, right? Finding Singapore's role in this changing world, right? And really defining what makes Singapore. It might actually be something that Singaporeans can get behind also, you know, like the fact that we are sort of in the middle. We don't take these extremes, right? Whether between East and West, between democracy and other kinds of political systems and all that, right? So I thought it was quite a positive interview in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was positive. The answers were assuring. But it just feels like, and maybe this is the way Singapore will be, or the parameters we have to play with for the short-term future, but it feels, you're in a corporate job, you know, like both of us have been in a corporate job.
Yeah.
And like, okay, it's comfortable and all, but like, you wake up every day and like, I'm doing my shit, you know. Or is it you go to work, you come back and like, okay, like, you can see the next 10 years. Does it make you go like, wow, I can't wait? Or is it like, okay, like, just carry on rowing down this river. So when I read it, I'm like, does it sound exciting? Doesn't sound exciting.
Okay.
And I think, not to say exciting is something that you want.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels like we are just like, you know, like holding ground, you know, like just the boat is like, we really don't want to rock the boat.
Yeah.
Which I understand, but is it exciting? Is it inspiring?
But I guess that's the thing, right? Like, you take someone like Lee Kuan Yew, you needed someone with that kind of personality for what Singapore was back then, right?
Yeah.
It was a question of survival, of putting food on the table, of keeping your children alive, right? You know, for the most part, I would say Singapore, we've gotten past that existential crisis of like, not even existential, but like that crisis of feeding the family and having roofs over our heads, right? Now we're entering that a bit more existential crisis of like, what is our role in the world, right? You know, people see us as definitely not superpower, but at least like we have a significant say in a lot more things in the region, right? And around the world because of our outsized influence. And you need that kind of person to steward steward that you through that phase as well, right? It's like if you're, you know, you're, let's say you're an entrepreneur or something, yeah, you know, you work hard, you raise money, you build up your empire. Then after that, you hand over the reins to a Tim Cook, right?
Mm.
At first, you start off as a Steve Jobs, right? Everyone fucking stepping on everyone, but you're creating the fucking iPhone, right?
Yeah.
But once that's done already, you hand over the stewardship to a Tim Cook, CFO, ex-CFO kind of person.
Because if you bring in another Steve Jobs,
it
would just like, let's destroy everything and build up again.
Yeah. And the presentations would be very fun to watch, you know, all the one more thing and you know, the Apple presentations.
Mm.
But, you know, but there's a lot more to lose, right? They have a lot more to lose. Whereas when you are like, when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, for example, it basically was trying to save Apple from like bankruptcy. And
so you needed a Steve Jobs.
You needed someone like Steve Jobs. Take a gamble, you know, really go out there, personality driven, win over the world kind of thing.
Mm.
But then after that, you hand over to Tim Cook. And I feel maybe Singapore Inc. is in that phase of like the handing over to a Tim Cook, right?
So maybe I'm just like, you know, when you enter your 30s, you're like, oh shit, I want to be in my 20s again.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you enter your 40s, you're like, oh my God, I don't like this. Is that what I'm feeling? Maybe like what you said, which I think is true, you look at it on an individual level. The way you behave in your early 20s, very different from your early 30s, very different from your early 40s.
Yeah.
You're still the same person, but your priorities change, even for companies. And now, like what you're saying, if we run with that, it's, Singapore is at the stage where we're not partying, you know? Yeah. We're not like, just anything is possible. We hustle and we make it happen. Now it's like, okay, we have the base. Yeah. Now it's about maintaining.
Yeah. And don't forget, back then, the population, I think, was much younger also, right? Because people having bigger families and a lot more young people in our workforce. We are now going trending the opposite direction where most, you know, we'll be a lot more older. We are a much older society, right? And it's not just about how many hours can you
play every day. Last time, Terrence, you club. You club until 5 a.m.
Come back to work the next
day. Now if I tell you, Terrence, want to go drinking till 5 a.m. I'll be the one to like, fuck off. Okay? No, past 11:30 already, I cannot function. Yeah,
10 o'clock already, I'm KO already. So it's like, that's how the population is now. We're not interested in that.
So maybe the disconnect is that there is a subset of the population that wants that but they're not getting it.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe that is the reason why a lot of people are feeling this way. Then you get the generation who are having their own midlife crisis, which Singapore will also have at some point.
Like,
who are we? You know, we have all the material comforts.
Correct.
So that'll be the next stage. Then maybe you need like a Steve Jobs in to come and shake things up again. Or maybe not.
A Trump. Yeah. So I really do believe that there is, you need different leadership styles for different size of company, different eras of a country's existence and things like that. So Singapore, we're moving in that direction where now we need to be really smart about how we navigate our place in the world.
It's like last time Lee Kuan Yew rain also, he like, fuck it, I'll give a speech. Yeah. Now we'll be, hey, got umbrella. Go in, don't get sick. Like we're all, like that.
And there's a lot of nuance to that. Even the whole Steve Jobs, Tim Cook thing, right? You know, it's not just about the personality of the person, but the fact that Tim Cook, apparently he's an expert at logistics, right? Or at least like understanding supply chain processes and all that. And that's part of what made Apple jump to the next level, you see, in terms of being able to produce enough and deliver on time and have the whole customer experience be very, very, very smooth. Tim Cook was, apparently he's an expert at that. And that's something that even Steve Jobs didn't have, right? So we're not saying that you just need a more docile personality to carry that. It comes with a different set of skills to navigate the supply chains, to have a good relationship with China, everything.
Because Apple became a $1 trillion company under Tim Cook, right?
Yeah.
So it might not have released something that was mind-breaking or mind-blowing, but it achieved a different kind of success, which is the kind of success that they needed.
So like what you're saying about Singapore now is, I think, this is what a lot of people say about Apple products. There's no more big iPhone, iPad release. You know, the presentations were iconic moments.
Iconic.
How do you think of an iconic moment when Tim Cook presenting something?
It's like, it's the iPad 5, the iPhone 17.
M4 chip, Pro Max. It's like, you don't remember any of these moments, but the company is doing probably better than ever, right?
That's true. That is true. And once you take it at that, with that lens, right, then maybe it's, okay, this is the next phase of Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different kind of Singapore.
Yeah.
And Yeah.
Yeah. Someone, and he, those attributes that you're looking at in that fighting game last time, those attributes don't apply anymore. Right? You are talking about PlayStation 1, where now we already have PS5 already.
Correct. Right? I mean, you hear that about people. So have you heard the phrase, you know, I like to work at companies that are going from 0 to 1. But the 1 to 10 or the 10 to 100, not my cup of tea.
Yeah. That's a lot of times, a founder, a very charismatic founder, you know, the guy who founded Uber and everything. Beyond a certain point, like the stuff he does
to won't
fly.
Right,
won't fly for as a public company, right?
Interesting, Interesting. But I guess next week is gonna be exciting, man.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, speaking of big companies and you know, how they structure and what they do to survive in this new world, some small companies or small businesses are having the reverse, having another problem. Like survivability is still a problem. And one of them is a very beloved small business in Singapore that shuttered last week. And yeah, here we are to debate about it. What is this business?
It is the news that Tambi Magazine Store, which is quite an iconic magazine store in Holland Village, is closing down after more than 80 years.
Wow.
So news first broke, I think sometime last week. Then it finally closed down on 5th May, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a lot of people on social media kind of like sharing photos. I think there are photos on the Straits Times of people who went down to take photos of Tambi closing the store. And then apparently on the day itself, a lot of fans came down to buy magazines and kind of like, you know, sharing memories and all that. There were multiple articles written with titles such as End of Era, Has Tambi Magazine Store Closed Down After More Than 80 Years? Holland Village Magazine Store Owner, Meet the a Universe of Magazines, Meet the Man Keeping Holland Village's Iconic Tambi Magazine Store Going. So kind of very nostalgic kind of things.
Yeah.
And then you see news of Chan Chun Seng walking around with Tambi to kind of find a new spot in Holland Village or something. Then as you read, like, he's not going to stop. He's just going to find a new location, right?
He's trying to find.
And it doesn't seem like he's closing it down. Because when I first saw the headlines and all, I thought, oh, it is because the business is like
not viable.
Yeah, not viable and it's closing down. But it soon came to light that it was because he was asked to close up his displays. Because he was famous, even different from his father, who took over the business from his father. After his father passed on and he took over, he removed all the magazines from the packaging. Because that was his thing. He wanted people to feel the magazines. And I think at their peak, they had 7,000 magazines. He used to work 18-hour days. And also, he was told to close his displays, right, and keep it in the shop.
Or at least reduce it by half.
And he said, no, that is the essence of the business. And he's been offered apparently like $500,000 to have the business bought and him stay on as a salaried employee. He said no. He said he can't imagine selling the business because it is a family thing. I think he employs his family members and all. So, I mean, it got a lot of love. Of course, I found it odd that there wasn't that much info on like the landlord and the development plans. Because I think some of the newspapers reached out to the building where he's situated and there was no comment on the landlord.
And he also he didn't want to comment on who was pressuring him to cut down his display.
Yeah.
His display shelf or so.
Yeah. And then Chan Chun Seng is walking around with him and all. Then as of yesterday, there was a news on Yahoo News by Neil Humphreys, who's quite a common prolific writer, commentator on Singapore issues. Title, Lament Tambi Magazine Store Closing Down But Stop the Hypocritical Heritage Wailing. Basically calling out what he referred to as social media hyenas circling around for viral posts, like taking photos and talking about all their memories. And he said, you can do all you want, but businesses like his need your money. So don't come crying about it when it's gone, when you could have supported it when it was alive.
He points out to the, I think you can see an image on the Straits Times article of like as he's shuttering his shop on the last day, a lot of people are standing there with their phones recording it as a video. Which that's what he meant by like those hyenas prowling around the demise of the store.
Yeah. So I mean like just wanted to talk through it because I mean it's been going around for a few, for like a week. But like what has your thoughts been about the whole thing?
Yeah, initially I thought it was because the business was not viable, because magazine readership is going down, right? Mm. Because of digital and all. But I think he quite clearly keeps repeating that it's not about the business viability, but it's about not being able to, you know, display his wares, right? Mm. The magazines. But ultimately, doesn't that boil down to money, right? I'm sure if you pay whoever it is that it decides this, if you paid a landlord or whatever, whoever enough, right? They will let you do whatever the hell you want with the space,
know.
Right?
I don't know.
Even if it's meant to be an open walkway, it's essentially you. If you pay the rent for that open walkway,
yeah,
and they will gladly open another walkway next to your thing, right?
I guess, but we don't know because we don't know what the development plans for the place are. Also,
yeah.
Right. That's so, right. So we don't know. Maybe the landlord has bigger plans for this. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like that's why I found so little info on that, which I found weird, because it's not. It's probably not difficult to find out who actually the landlord is.
Yeah, people have dug it out already.
But yeah, so you said you started off feeling that way. Then?
Yeah. No, so to me it was like, we say on paper that it's not a viability issue, right? But ultimately, it is, to me it is, it's because it's probably somebody thinking that the right to display the magazines is not an important part of the overall ecosystem that they want to build around this area, right? Whoever it is in charge, whether it's the landlord or the authorities that want to develop this area, they don't feel like it's something worth keeping around. So to me, it really is an issue of viability also, and how important this store is.
Viability, because I don't know too, we don't know enough about the terms of the landlord or whether he could even display it.
Yeah.
But I guess I found the article by Neil Humphreys a bit annoying.
Oh yeah.
Because it just sounds like someone who is still angry at the nature of social media.
Mm-hmm.
When things happen, people go and take pictures and all post. That's almost part of it now.
Mm-hmm.
And him saying that, don't come complaining when it's closed. Because you could have patronized it.
Yeah.
To me, it's like if a relative dies and you're you go and pay your respects and all and you cry, then I'm like, fuck you lah. You don't cry. You go come and see her. Huh? So don't give me all these tears, right? When she or he passes on, you could have visited her, so you shut up.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt he did have a line, Singapore is too small to preserve every struggling business and building whatever the heritage value unless we patronize them, which I agree. Whether it's a Holland Village magazine seller, a bookstore, or hawker stall, nostalgic love letters after the fact will not save them. I agree to a certain extent, because I think there are certain businesses and intangible heritage items that should be preserved, even if they are not the most profitable. If there's a more profitable business that is modern, selling crypto-powered coffee or something, I don't think it should just be seen based on that. And that's why I felt this article was it just feels like a scolding people.
Scolding people for
feeling sad.
Sad about something.
Even the people who went down to take photos of the closing and all, to me, I'm like, if they're capturing it, it's like a time capsule of what happened.
Yeah.
Is that bad?
Yeah. And we come from a place where, when we speak to the media about something that bad that happened to us, or we're in a bad situation we're in, right?
Mm.
We do want people to sit up and notice and make posts about it and things like that, right?
Mm.
So in some ways, I'm sure for the magazine, Sam himself, right? The owner of the Tambi magazine store. This was something he wanted, the publicity around it as well, right?
Mm.
So... it doesn't make sense to me to be so angry at people when they react to the publicity they react to this sort of mini campaign that Sam was putting out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a bit unnecessary also.
But do you think businesses like this should be, more proactively preserved, whatever that means?
More proactively preserved.
The easiest way is given a grant or subsidy or something like that.
You read the interview with Lawrence Wong that we just discussed, right? And I think he talks a bit about there are sunset industries, and the viability of these industries is, we can have a cushion for people when they land, but ultimately, the truth is these industries are not that viable, right? And we have a cushion such that you can reskill, upskill, whatever, retool yourself for another kind of industry, right?
Mm.
So there are a lot of industries that are going through tough times now, right? With digitization and everything, right? And AI all coming up. How to say that one particular type of business is more deserving of being saved than another type, right?
Mm.
I'm not saying I disagree with doing that, but that's the part that I would say, it's quite hard to immediately justify, oh, this guy should be given a grant because, he's been around for 80 years or something like that, right?
Mm.
I mean, I would love for the old McDonald's at KAP or at East Coast Park and all these places to remain as how they were, when I was a child and everything, right? Or a teenager. But, I guess in my life, I've seen so many of these businesses come and go, and then the spaces that they leave behind are created in the new spaces that allow other young people to create new memories. And it's, in some ways, I've come to terms with it as I've had my run at these places. I've had my fair share of fun and memories created at these places. Now it's time for someone else to, create their own memories in this space, and not for me to be so angry that my memories of this place are more important than anyone else's or anyone else's needs. That you should be preserving this space for me, for me and all the other people my age.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess when you were talking about it, it reminded me of something that I saw a while ago that I think actually kind of addresses what I was suggesting. What you're saying is that there shouldn't be blind handouts, right?
Mm.
Just because this is some sort of heritage and all. But to NHB's credit, I believe they do support heritage businesses.
Mm. Mm.
So there is a heritage business is a term. It's any business that deals with traditional crafts and practices, our unique identity and history. And they have the Organizational Transformation Grant, which started in 2021. I hope it's still going on, where they help heritage businesses transform their operations. So I don't know whether this Thambi magazine store would classify as a heritage business.
Does it classify as a heritage business?
I don't think so.
In your estimation?
No, I don't think so. But because, it's magazines, right? It's super cool that he had up to 7,000 magazines.
Yeah.
But maybe there should be something that these sort of companies can apply for that kind of highlights why their business should be preserved. And if you can articulate it, then kudos to you and you get some sort of support. Because you think about it, if 80-year-old businesses just die out like that, that has you can argue that it's in some way a third space. That's a term, right? A third space.
Where people
gather and have some sort of community around it.
They can, that is not sanctioned by particularly by institution or something.
Just a very organic community space. I think those things are so far and few between. As much as you see all the development in Singapore, everything coming up is great, but the soul is somewhat lacking. So maybe it's not a heritage business, it's a soul business.
Yeah.
So if there's something there, then I think, and it's not a blanket handout. It's just something that, you have proven your worth, your soft, intangible worth, and let's try and help you.
But for me, I think it should not be the job of the government to have to do that. And I say that because I think there are other ways to milk this, right? Mm. Not say milk this, but to find a win-win situation for everyone. And it really is if anything the government can do is to try and work with someone in the private sector, whether it's the real estate company or something, to find a way to incorporate this, for example, this Thambi magazine store into whatever new plans that they have going forward, right? And I think the clearest example is whenever we Golden Mile Tower, when they want to develop it, right? But they're looking at it how can we preserve the external facade of the place, the shape of the building, everything, and then still develop it for the future, right?
Mm.
So I think that actually can be done for for businesses. If you go to Bras Basah now, it's not exactly the same, but it gives you a little glimpse of what could
Bras Basah Complex.
Bras Basah Complex. I think we go to the, I can't remember if it's the first or second floor. There's a BreadTalk there now in Bras Basah Complex, quite a new one. And what's unique about the BreadTalk is that they opened a BreadTalk within what used to be a music bookstore. And they actually kept the signboard of the music bookstore, but then overlaid the Toastbox logo and everything over it. So you see, it's kind of strange. It looks like almost like the place is half constructed or something, you know?
Mm.
But it tells you that, okay, this is this big business, Toastbox, what has come and taken over this place that was very beloved to people who visited Bras Basah, right?
Mm.
But they preserved the facade of the place. Mm. And you go inside, there's references to music and books and all that, right? And they celebrate the heritage of the place. So that people who go there and are drinking coffee or eating kaya toast, never forget that this is used to be a, you know, very beloved music bookstore. Mm. So I don't know how much collaboration there was with the previous owner of the place or what. But it tells you that, hey, people realize that actually caring about the heritage of the place that they're in can be good business for them also. Can make your business, your brand stand out and everything. So you look at cafes in Tiong Bahru, for example, they strike this very interesting balance, like the Tiong Bahru bakery at Tiong Bahru itself. Mm. They try to strike this balance between the heritage of the place and being modern and new, right?
Mm.
And I feel like that's where bigger businesses can be creative in you know, keeping these very beloved institutions alive, rather than the government having to come in and give a handout saying that, oh, this is a difficult, this is an important business.
But even just like you said, it's for the government to work with the property developers.
As in, they could find some way to incentivize property developers to want to do that, right? Like maybe some grant for, if you have a heritage brand that you are promoting as part of your new development, and you show that you are taking steps to incorporate this into your facade and all that.
But isn't it still the government coming in?
Yeah, but it's, you see it more as, so the government helps, but it doesn't just give a handout to the small business to survive, you know what I mean? So it's actually the big business working with the small business to try and find something viable, commercially viable, and then the government also comes in and helps with some kind of subsidy or something like that. I think it's, you know, we talked a lot about this, but I feel like for our media industry in Singapore, it's not about, I don't think it should be about the government giving grants to filmmakers to go and make film, you know, but don't talk about what your ROI is. It should be the government working with big Singapore companies like SIA, and anyone telling SIA you need to feature a Singapore production or company on the cover of your SQ magazine every month. That is like priceless. That's something that any small media company would not be able to do on their own, you know, even if you give them money, you know. So it's less about those like direct handouts to the small heritage
for
businesses.
Creating something new.
Yeah. Forcing them, or at least like encouraging them to find other ways to preserve the heritage of the place, but also to modernize and move with the times as well.
I mean, I like that. I like that idea. But you know, I'm looking at the Toastbox at the music book room.
Yeah.
It's literally the sign is music book room, but it's just fucking plastered the Toastbox light on.
Correct.
So I don't know if you ask music book room, the people they're like, this sucked. Yeah. Okay, they didn't want to take out a sign. It's like rubbing salt into the wound.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I assume, give them benefit of the doubt, that this was meant for the heritage factor.
No, I don't know about the money, whether there was any money exchange.
Yeah.
But the very least is that it shows that there's respect for what the place used to be, right?
Mm.
Rather than completely just, imagine they just wiped out the existence of what it was, a music bookstore.
Yeah.
And it's just a white color, plain vanilla Toastbox sign on it.
Yeah.
Zero personality.
Yeah.
Everyone loses.
And I mean, on a slightly tangent but related, like even, you know, the newer MRT stations for the TEL, right?
Mm.
The other day I walked past Thompson MRT and it's damn nice, though.
Mm.
The way they did it, like it's woody and like it's curved. And I was like, oh, fuck, that's an MRT station.
Yeah.
It fits in so nicely with the greenery there.
Yeah.
So in some way, that's respecting the greenery.
So
in this case, maybe even if it was for the landlord to realize that, Tambi magazine store has actually a lot of value that you can kind of, even for your own commercial benefit, kind of maximize. As opposed to letting an Arabica coffee open there or something.
Yeah. Because it can become, over time, if you do it well, it can become its own, become a tourist attraction on its own. You know?
Yeah.
And I say that coming from I mentioned a lot of times I was in Korea recently in Jeju, and just understanding the history of like the, there's, they have this female divers that have been there for like 80, 100 years, like, mm-hmm. right? And yeah, I've actually visited the museum of that they created for this group of people. All right, it's mm-hmm. a dying trade, you know, like there's all, I actually saw them in action. They're all in the 80s, the 70s, 80s already. They're the ones who dive in the water to dig up like abalone to sell, mm-hmm. right? But they're all women, right? And they feed their family that way, you see.
Mm.
It's a dying trade, not viable anymore. But they saw an opportunity to really like celebrate it as heritage, create a museum experience out of it. And then they even submitted it for UNESCO heritage, cultural heritage thing. And they got it. And now it's become a thing, you know, a tourist attraction in itself. So it's a very long process, all these things. They take like 10, 20, 30 years to get to like UNESCO World Heritage. I'm not saying that Tummy Magazine store can become UNESCO World Heritage. But my point is that, you can't expect it to just happen overnight. Like this year, we're going to do something. And then next year, Tummy Magazine store becomes a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
But you need to start slowly showing, paying respect to the heritage icons in Singapore.
Yeah.
And not just like, clean slate, let's demolish everything and rebuild again and demolish everything and rebuild again.
Because you mentioned tourist attraction, like when I went to Seoul last year, I went to get a shave at the oldest barber in Seoul. I mean, it took damn long to shave my face. But it was great. And in this case, the good thing is that I don't think he will have a shortage of potential landlords coming to him and saying, we have the space, let's do something. Hopefully he gets a space and hopefully that something nice comes out of it. But do you think that I think I've heard some comments about how he's like, he's milking it for what it's worth and being overly dramatic and all.
No, I don't think so. I think it's this is what he needs to do to get, not the attention of the government or anything, but to get like what I mentioned, like even a private investor or someone who might sees value in this business possibly to wake up like, oh, this place is closing now. I didn't know. I better go and like do something to help it. Not just buy one magazine, but like work with him to see if there's something that can be done.
I mean, recently on TikTok, there was this turtle farm.
Oh, yes.
Right. That did a TikTok video and managed to raise like 34,000. I didn't even know that was farm existed.
I've been before.
Oh, you've been?
Yeah. It's quite an interesting experience to, and a part of Singapore that you wouldn't go to
very often.
You know, like, I think we should encourage these brands to use social media to go out there and create the publicity for themselves in whatever way. We shouldn't be, I don't know why Neil Humphreys needs to be so upset about people wanting to come and take pictures.
In fact, the social media hyenas, go forth.
Go forth. Take more pictures, post more stuff,
That's right.
Take selfies with him, everything. This is exactly what he needs for his business. And I'm sure even in this whole process of getting all this publicity, I'm sure his perspective on things also have evolved somewhat. Maybe he realizes, there is a future for this if I find a different way. And getting a chance for the local, MP, Chan Chun Sing himself to walk around with you. You and I, you want to change office, do you think any MP will come and walk around with us and go and find office? Nobody will. Come on. It's like a photo opportunity. I looked at it, I was like, wow, how come they're like walking the ground together? It's like you won't get this opportunity if there wasn't this publicity.
Suddenly we see Tombi NFTs all coming out. Tombi NFTs.
That one, like, it's 2021 maybe, but now a bit too late.
Tombi life coaching, interesting. Hopefully he finds a space. And, hopefully more of these like the turtle farm and all.
If someone like a Toastbox decides to open there and they have a section that is all magazines for people to browse while eating... Eating, drinking coffee and toast.
Yeah, it'd be great, man.
Fucking great, right? It becomes like a lifestyle destination already.
That would be great, man.
Tambi box. Tambi box. What do you call it?
Tambi box sounds like a room full of Indian people.
I never say. In Singapore, we're very tolerant and we CMIO, we're off all races.
Tambi box, Tambi box, that sounds like a club, man. Tambi box. All the best to him, man.
I'm glad for him that he's getting his this coverage as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, man.
Cool.
Cool.
Shall we look at the one shook comments?
One shook comment.
I wonder if we say, Yalaba is going to shut down, then you think also people will come and like come and cry and take photos of us like at our last podcast recording.
The thing is, we haven't been around for 80 years.
500 episodes. Eh?
500 episodes. Okay, what? I think need a bit more than that. Like. I think need a bit more than that.
Okay, 1,000. And people cry. Come and cry for you. So, yeah. What is your one short comment?
Do you have yours in front of you?
Yeah, I have actually.
My tabs are failing me.
This is the interesting one. This time I'm taking a comment from Spotify itself. Because actually you can comment on Spotify. For those of you who don't know already, after you listen to Spotify, there's a section, a Q&A where what do you think about this episode? Any suggestion or ideas? And there's a really interesting comment from our last episode about 524 penalties for dangerous driving. Alexis Wu says, I love it as usual, but I always feel that like Terrence sometimes is a bit mean to Harish in the tone when he responds back to him. Stop bullying Harish, Terrence.
Hey, why the mocking voice, Terrence?
It's not mocking, it's just how I sound. That's how I sound when I'm emotional.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
So, yeah, you know, it was nice to see that this comment came through Spotify. I rarely look at comments on Spotify, but yeah. Now that I know people are responding on Spotify.
But Terrence, I don't appreciate the gleeful smile on your face.
Why? They're saying I'm bullying you. Like,
yeah,
I'm
so not don't you want to reflect?
Reflect and?
And just understand that sometimes your actions can be perceived a certain way. And maybe there's some truth. There's no smoke without fire, man.
But she says, I love it as usual.
No, she says she loved the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, but the next word after that was but, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you feel that you're being bullied?
I mean, now that she mentioned it, right, like, I do feel it.
You're the victim.
I am the victim.
I thought you stand by what you say and everything all the time.
Yeah, but I mean, that's because I'm pushed into a corner, Terrence. Can I hold on to except my conviction?
Okay.
Yeah, so Terrence, I think you have to pause and reflect, okay? Just reflect.
I would love for people to, you know.
You hear that laughter or not? You're listening or watching. Look at the laughter and glee in Terrence's face, right?
I'm enjoying it.
That comment just bounced off him. And yeah, him selecting it as your one show comment is almost patronizing, Terrence.
No, it's not. It didn't even bounce on me. I feel like this is great that people are pointing out this dynamic.
So will it is it give you like something to think about over the weekend?
Nothing. this is what we're here for, right? To
bullying, talk about is it?
It's not bullying. You know, so even in this podcast, as much as it's like an hour plus long, this is just one sliver of the interactions between me and Harish on a daily basis. So if you don't judge bullying based on 1 hour of interaction between the two of us, there's still many, many hours that we get through. Where it's a different dynamic.
But this is what people see.
This is what people see.
You know, this is what people
and
see.
They perceive
Terrence.
It as, as bullying.
So regardless of what you say, I hope you take it back and think, man, over the weekend.
And I think you can go ahead and treat that friend who left this comment. I'm not sure which one of your friends you asked to leave this comment.
Just earlier in the day, Terrence said, it's your mother, is it? You got your mother to leave a comment, is it?
I said it very gently. I asked her gently. And they said, it's your mother. Is it? Hey, Harish, maybe you don't ask your mother to comment. So
same thing, okay? Same thing. You say tomato, I say tomato.
Oh, man.
So my one short comment was a comment that actually came through our ministryoffunny.com website.
Mm.
Because it was a submission there, I won't reveal the identity of the person, but they did say, hey, I just wanted to thank you for having the Palestinian lady on your show. It was eye-opening and gives a perspective that we don't really get from typical MSM. Mm. So basically, they were in support of that. I know the comments have been very polarizing, but just hearing a comment like that makes us feel like, oh, okay. At least some people have found value in it.
Mm.
So, thanks for that comment.
Yeah.
So that was my one short comment.
Cool.
Cool. And what about your one short thing, man?
My one short thing is, just now we're talking about Apple and everything, right?
Mm.
Apple just recently had an event recently, I think last Thursday or something, was it?
Mm.
A few days ago, to announce the new iPads. And they had an ad that I thought was pretty interesting. Basically, you can find it online now. It's called Crush. It's an ad for the iPad Pro, where basically they show a compactor, compacting a whole bunch of things, piano, computers, TV screens, and some other things. It just crushes everything, and then it opens up, and then it's an iPad Pro underneath. So basically what they were just saying is that iPad Pro basically takes everything that you need for entertainment, for creation, for anything in your life, and then puts in this really, really thin slab that apparently is the thinnest product that Apple has ever produced, thinner than iPad Nano and all that. So I watched the ad and I found it quite interesting because immediately my first thought was like, hey, they're crushing a real piano for the sake of, you know, making this ad. And you know, Apple's all about sustainability and all that. Like, isn't that a bit of a waste? But I still thought the ad was quite interesting because just visually it was.
Is
quite
that something. The reason why you got some controversy?
I don't think so. No. Like no. Nobody's. I mean, I'm nitpicking here, lah. An ad is an ad, lah, right? But it was just a interesting looking ad that I thought I was like.
Yo, Apple apologizes for iPad Pro ad showing hydraulic press destroying guitars and piano.
Okay. Oh yeah. So I'm ahead of the.
Because I remember seeing some kind of controversy. So Apple took on Thursday the unusual step of apologizing.
For a
short advertising video.
Oh yeah.
The spot provoked derision, including extensive media coverage, as viewers said it made Apple look out of touch.
Yeah. Because, Apple's all about sustainability and zero carbon emissions. But here they are destroying, like, perfectly functioning musical instruments and tools and everything, and computer screens to sell an iPad Pro.
So it was because of the backlash that they decided to not run the ad on TV.
But it's on YouTube. It's still there.
It's on YouTube, but not on TV.
Yeah, not on TV. But so, I watched it on the live stream.
This is a very un-Tim Cook thing to do, right?
It is, yeah. Trying to,
Man, you Google Apple ad, all the news on CNA, BBC, CNBC. Yeah, man. Wow.
So I was ahead of the curve.
The Guardian, Variety.
Yeah.
Hugh Grant also slammed the tech giant.
I did, yeah. In some sense, it's also quite sad, right? If you are a creator and you see your tools that you use every day for creation for the last 20, 30, 40 years
to be crushed
and being told that this slab of metal will replace everything that you've ever done in your life. It is quite, there's something about it that's quite dystopian.
Oh, like the Bloomberg title is Apple puts out new iPad ad triggering AI fears.
Yeah.
So Terrence, that's your one shock thing.
My one shock thing. I wanted to get people's reactions. I did not know that it really triggered such a big reaction.
Triggered such a big reaction.
Mm.
Wow, Terrence, again, the gleeful look on your face.
Yeah.
As things are being destroyed there.
Yes. But yes, what is your one shook thing?
My one shook thing is, as much controversy as Hamilton got in Singapore, there's news that for the West End staging of Hamilton, right, the person who's going to play the female lead of Eliza is a Singaporean actress-singer called Nathania Ong. Yeah, so she's based in overseas and she got the role and it's a pretty major role, man.
Mm.
Because the first performance she'll be doing will be on June 17th.
Mm.
And the show is now booking till March 29th, 2025 with 8 shows a week.
Yeah.
So she will be performing like hundreds of shows.
Wow.
This is her third role on the West End.
Mm.
She even was part of Les Mis. Les Mis. So, kudos. Shout out to you, Nathania Ong.
Mm.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so cool. That's my one.
Singaporeans making waves around the world.
Yeah, man.
But she didn't perform in Singapore. Like,
no, she didn't. Did not perform in Singapore.
Hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks. That was our one shook thing. Remember, if you enjoyed this podcast, tell someone else about it. Follow us on social media. And if you want to work with us, what should they do, Terrence?
Ministryoffunny.com. Check it out.
Hell yeah. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody.